Sanjam.
Madam President, I move that further proceedings under the roll call be dispensed with and the Sergeant of Arms be instructed to bring in the absent members.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Today's chaplain is Reverend Charles Lockowitzer from St. John Newman Catholic Church in Eagan. And following the prayer, please remain standing for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Let us pray. God, beyond all praising, I offer my humble words on behalf of these, the servants of the citizens of the state of Minnesota. Help us to be patient with those still seeking an image of you worthy of praise. Help us be patient with those whose image of you excludes all other images. Gathered all together in our different ways of worship, prayer, and service in your name, we still fall short of living up to our identity as your children. So be patient with us as you gift us with the virtues of faith, hope, and love, for you have given us every gift we need to meet every need we have. May we steward your gifts to help those most in need of your providential care. May our service help us to build a just society worthy of your grace. To that end, we remember in prayer those who have and continue to represent our state in our nation's military service. May our work this day be virtuous, and at the end of this day, may our gratitude for your abundant blessings indeed praise you. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag. Secretary will take the roll.
Senators Bach, Benson, Bonhoff, Brown, Carlson, Chamberlain, Cohen, Dames, Daly, DeCraif, Dibble, Dietzick, Eaton, Fishbach, Gazelka, Gerlach, Gimsey, Goodwin, Hall, Han, Harrington, Hayden, Higgins, Hoffman, Howe, Ingerbertson, Jungbauer, Keelash, Koch, Cruz, Langseth, Latz, Lilly, Limmer, Laurie, Magnus, Marty, McGuire, Metzen, Michelle, Miller, Nelson, Newman, Nino, Olson, Ortman, Pappas, Perry, Peterson, Reinert, Rest, Roebling, Rosen, Saxhog, Sunjum, Sharon, Sieben, Scoy, Sparks, Stump, Thompson, Tomasoni, Torres, Ray, Vanderveer, Wieger, Wolf.
Quorum is present. Moving to the fifth order of business, the reports of committee. Senator Sunjum.
Madam President, I move that committee reports printed in the agenda be adopted.
On that motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the sixth order of business, the second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on page 3 of today's Senate agenda, second reading. Moving to the eighth order of business, introduction and first reading of Senate bills. They are printed on today's Senate bill introduction. They will be referred as indicated, first reading. Moving to the ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. There are three printed on page 3 of today's Senate agenda. They will be taken as one motion. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Senator Gerlach. I was mistaken on those. Remaining under motions and resolutions. Senator Sunjum. Senator Sunjum, would you like to designate several bills as special orders?
Thank you, Madam President. I was thinking maybe there was a couple of other orders of business ahead of us. Madam Chair and members, pursuant to Rule 26, I designate that the following bills be made special orders for immediate consideration. And members, you have a sheet on your desk. I will name them. Number 38, Senate File 1675, Senator Benson. Number 61, Senate File 1843, Senator DeCraif. Number 92, Senate File 1975, Senator DeCraif. Number 119, Senate File 750, Senator Carlson, and Senate File, pardon me, number 139, Senate File 2493, Senator Ingebrigtsen. And it's my understanding, Madam Chair, that we would like to start with number 61, Senator DeCrive.
Senator Senjum has designated several bills as special orders. If you have not received the sheet there, it is available here in the front of the chamber. We will begin with number 61 on general orders, Senate File 1843, Senator DeCrive.
Thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1843 is a bill to keep the state parks open in the event of another state shutdown. This bill allocates funds from the state parks account so state parks can remain open in the event of another state shutdown. The fees that the state park receive from camping and other recreation are deposited into this account. The state parks in Minnesota are owned by the people of Minnesota. During the state shutdown in 2011, folks in Minnesota who had reservations to camp were met with park closed to the public signs when they arrived. This should never again occur in Minnesota, and I hope we can work together with Governor Dayton to agree that the citizens own the state parks in Minnesota and should never be closed again. The net income to the state that was lost during the shutdown was nearly $350,000, and when we're arguing about money, it just seems to me that we should not be shutting off the money supply. I request a green vote on this bill, and I thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 1843. Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much. I have an amendment to this bill. I'm wondering if it's been presented to the desk yet.
Senator Sharon, it doesn't appear as though we have the amendment at the desk.
I request then that the bill be progressed until we have an opportunity. I was informed that the amendments would be ready.
Senator Sharon, that would be up to the author, and it would be an issue of laying it on the table.
I would make that request.
Senator DeCrive.
Madam President, that would be okay if I would lay this on the table. I have another bill I could do and then come back to it.
Senator DeCrive moves to lay Senate File 1843 on the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving on, we will take up number 92 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1975. Senator DeCrive.
I thank you, Madam President. Senate File 1975 is a bill that would allow for an ongoing operations for the Racing Commission and State Lottery. The state shutdown in the summer of 2011 was devastating to the racing industry in Minnesota. The industry pays 100% of the regulatory costs related to the Minnesota Racing Commission and generates revenue to the state when they are operating, so shutting the state down during a state shutdown is unnecessary. The money to regulate the horse industry was in the bank, paid for by the tracks during the shutdown, and it made no sense that the Minnesota Racing Commission was unable to access these funds. Canterbury Park and Running Aces are private businesses that suffered great significant financial harm, some of which are unique to their industry when their industry is caused to shut down. For them to conduct a race meet, they need to be able to recruit horsemen from around the country to ship their horses to Minnesota for the summer. These recruited horsemen incur significant expenses in moving and need to be certain that they will have the opportunity to race. Winning prize money is the only way they derive income. This group that travels to Minnesota have many other options of places to race during the summer and won't come here if there is uncertainty. I am aware of only one other time in the 150-year history of racing that racing was shut down due to a government shutdown of regulators, and that was New Jersey in 2005 when tracks and casinos were closed for a few days. If another shutdown were to be experienced like the one in 2011, it could cause irreprehensible harm to the racing industry in Minnesota, along with many small businesses that support it. And some of these businesses that are affected are people that breed horses, along with all the supporting staff, the owners, trainers, jockeys, drivers, grooms, hot walkers, veterinarians, farriers, and others. According to the state government shutdown executive summary created by the Minnesota Management and Budget, they list the lottery revenue losses at $9.98 million. And once again, Madam President, when we are arguing about money, it just doesn't make any sense to me to shut off our money supply. Thank you.
Further discussion on Senate File 1975, Senator Sharon.
Thank you. You know, this is not the first of a number of bills that have been presented that talk about continuing spending after a shutdown. And as you know, that what the people of this state have been talking about to us since the shutdown during the last legislative session is that what we should do is get our work done on time. And in order to do that, we have to increase those things that we do during the regular session that will increase our capacity for conflict resolution. And there are certain components of our processes. Our rules are some of those processes that are in place that help us come to conflict resolution. The real way to address the concerns of the public about avoiding a shutdown is to engage in activity that will prevent that, rather than a lights-on bill, such as this bill, that allows for continued spending and allows for the public to have, the legislature to have very little reason to continue to engage in conflict resolution. This bill, as well as the former bill, all and others that have been brought up in the legislature, have as essential components to them a diminishment of the pressure on the legislature to get their work done on time. Now, I know it sounds sort of easy to the public to say, gee, we hate to have the consequences of your failure to do your work be imposed on the state of Minnesota, but the people of Minnesota have the consequences of what this legislature does from the very day we walk into this legislature. From the first day that we are in the legislature, we engage in passing bills that increase or decrease people's ability to engage in activities. We increase or decrease mandates that help one group over another group. We take away money from groups. We authorize money for other groups. Spending is something that we are always debating on the floor of the legislature. It is inherent in every bill that we pass. So the capacity for us to increase or decrease spending, increase or decrease positive or negative consequences on the public, starts on the very first day that we walk into this legislature. The legislative session is the time in which we should resolve those issues about spending rather than propose bills at this point that allow people to continue to spend when we haven't done our work, done the proper debate that resolves the issue about whether or not the very spending that is in your bill, Senator DeKreif, or in the former bill, other bills for lights on, are simply a continued spending without a decision or an action on the part of the legislature.
Further discussion, Senator Roebling.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to support Senator DeKreif's bill. Last summer, during the shutdown, we had an industry in Shakopee with nearly 1,100 employees, none of them state workers, none of them who should have been involved because of this, affected for nearly 3 weeks by the shutdown. And members, it almost devastated that industry. And it certainly hurt the people who work there, who were depending upon that revenue for their summer jobs. There were a lot of college students who work there. They only have maybe 12 months of the summer to work, and then they couldn't because we had to shut down that facility. And members, the money was there. The park had paid their fees for their license to cover the cost of regulating the races, and it was in the bank, and it just had not been appropriated yet. So truly, this is an area where we could allow this to continue as long as they have paid their licenses, and that's what Senator DeKreif's bill is asking for. There is really no reason this can't be a standing appropriation as long as they are paying their licenses. And then that private business can continue to operate no matter what goes on here. And hopefully it won't happen again. And if it happens in 10 or 20 or 30 years, at least this is not going to be an issue like it was last time. And really, you know, cause problems for that industry. These people come up to race their horses from all over the country. They sat idle. They still had to care for them and feed them. And, you know, they had expenses, and it was a lot of people without work. And so it just makes sense when the money was in the bank for that purpose.
Members, just as a gentle reminder, it is getting rather noisy in here, and people are having a difficult time hearing. So if we could keep the level down, I would appreciate it. Senator DeCraif.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to just reference a couple of things that Senator Sheeran mentioned. Number one, she talked about appropriating money. Madam President, this money has already been paid. These people have already been paid by this private industry. They have paid money into that special account for these people. Now, the state shutdown, what it effectively did is it took their money from them that they already paid into that special account for that special reason, and it held it from them. And I don't think that's fair, first of all. It nearly destroyed an industry in Minnesota. I'd like to comment on a couple of other things that Senator Sheeran brought up. She brought up conflict resolution. That's what we've been elected to do. You know, to bring in union-style negotiators to negotiate between the governor and the legislature, to me, doesn't make any sense when what we've been hired, not hired, but we've been elected to do this job. So what I would suggest that what that would do is I would say if I have a car that Blue Book and my car is worth $5,000 and somebody wants to buy that car, they'd like to offer me $4,000. What I could do is I could say, well, I want $10,000. And then what we would have to do is bring in this mediator to mediate a halfway point. So a car that's probably worth $5,000, I would argue I should get more than $5,000 for that. That to me is what a mediator ends up doing. You set the mark so high that it doesn't make any sense. And that, I believe, is what happened last year. We put forward balanced budgets. We put forward our bills, and we asked the governor and the commissioners to come and work together with us to make sure that we didn't end up in a state shutdown. To me, what compromise is let's find the areas that we agree on. There's a number of bills that we were so close we should have had signed. But the governor said, no, nothing at all until we agree on everything. So we made the states suffer. We nearly destroyed some industries. We disrupted so many people in the state of Minnesota last year. And I believe we should not do that again. I believe that we should talk now when the pressure's not on, that, and we should agree with the governor that there's areas that we can agree should not be ever shut down again. Thank you.
Senator Sheeran, I will allow you to respond because I am getting a long list. So just, but I believe that Senator Kreif had made some comments directly about your comments. So.
Yes, and I hadn't brought up any alternative yet, but I do intend to do that, so he's preempting the amendments that will be coming to these bills. But I did want to say that I do agree with Senator DeCraif about his concern about the work that needs to be done and owned by the legislature. Of course, that was a statement that he made in response to the idea of a mediator. But the fact is that although I agree with him that the legislature ought to get its work done on time and ought not need a mediator, absolutely agree with that. But the fact is that that work did not get done on time, and that the issue at hand is whether or not you want to put government spending on autopilot or if you want to engage in activities that will increase the probability, the pressures on us as legislators, to in fact get our work done on time. So there's no disagreement with Senator DeCraif or other members of this caucus who say that's the work of the legislature to get the work done on time. That's been a critical point that I've been making for every one of these bills. It is our job, the legislature, to put together a bill that is capable of getting a signature from the governor, and the legislature failed to do that. So the question at hand is whether or not we should be able to increase the pressures on us before the end of session and before a shutdown in order to get our work done and to use the process of debate and mediation and conflict resolution to get the work done and to avoid a shutdown. Not to put into law provisions that allow us to continue autopilot spending, completely disregard the responsibility and the work of the legislature, diminish the probability of conflict resolution, and allow those people especially to turn the power over to those that simply do not want any resolution, to simply continue to say no, 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 knowing that we'll go into shutdown and that there's this automatic spending that will continue without really allowing the legislature to establish whether or not that is a priority or not.
I have Senator McGuire, then Senator Gazelka, then Senator Latz, and Senator Higgins. So, Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise to oppose this bill before us because I do think it sends the wrong message to the public. The public, they pay money in taxes, they pay money in fees, they pay money to the state government so that we will get our work done and to fund the things that need to be funded, like our educational system, like our nursing homes, our healthcare system, our parks. The public expects us to get our work done. What this bill does is it removes all the consequences for us not getting our work done. We really ought to be encouraging resolution, not providing a reason to not have resolution. And what I really am concerned about with this bill is that it sends the message that it's more important to fund our lottery and our racing commission than it is to fund our schools, our early childhood care institutions, our higher ed institutions, our nursing homes. I'd like to see the bill that if we were going to do this, that would actually fund a lot of the issues that the public is really concerned about, which is the areas where we can get the most out of our money, which is in the areas of prevention. We should be funding early childhood in these areas. We should be funding early intervention. That will save us money in the long run. And so I am very concerned about these bills that are coming before us that really encourage or they actually, you know, allow for us to not get our work done. We ought to be having bills that really promote and encourage us to get our work done.
Senator Gazelka.
Madam President, to use the people of Minnesota as a pawn when the governor and the legislative bodies cannot agree is wrong. It's wrong. And I rise in support of this bill and bills like this. I have a bill that's similar to this that will come before this body. When we cannot agree, we should do everything we can to not inflict pain on the people of Minnesota. This is a tale of two administrations. Governor Pelosi's administration, when they came to an impasse, found as many areas that they could possibly agree on, wrapped them up, closed them up, so that the people of Minnesota did not suffer. Our current administration chose a different path, only wrapping up agriculture and leaving everything else open, creating unnecessary pain on the people of Minnesota. So, Senator DeKreif, I'm thankful that you're bringing this forward. This is money that was already there, already available. We did not need to inflict pain. It cost the state a lot of money. It cost the businesses of people of Minnesota a lot of money, and it hurt the people of Minnesota. So thank you for bringing this forward.
Senator Latz.
Thank you, Madam President and members. I'm a little troubled by Senator Roebling's suggestion that just because the money's in the bank, we should let it be spent absent other agreements. It's in the bank because of the way the statutes have set up the system. It's collected, it's in the bank, subject to legislative appropriation to be spent in the next biennium. If we don't like it that way, then let's set up a statutory change that doesn't put it in the bank subject to an appropriation. Let's put it in some independent place that has authorization beyond the biennium. We haven't done that. There's a reason why the legislature has retained its authority
to make appropriation decisions about money that is collected and is indeed sitting in the bank. And that's because, presumably, we wish to have control over exactly how that money in the bank gets spent in the next biennium. So setting the, as has already been said, putting it on autopilot with the current, or with that current biennium spending priorities, does not accomplish the purpose of the statutory scheme and that's set up to collect the money and hold it until we collectively make appropriation decisions. And the fact is, those decisions are inherently in a political process. The people who elected us here, yeah, sent us to do our job, and the job was to get done with our budget on time. But that job also was, number one, to fight for the priorities of the constituents that elected us. Two, to exercise our own judgment as to which priorities are more important than other priorities. And three, where appropriate, I would submit, make compromises, because a political process inherently involves compromise. And where you have a political process set up with a legislature and a governor, the legislature has to pass laws that we agree with the governor will sign. In the end, that's the process, and the people who elect us know that. And there are going to be times when there are such differences that the process isn't going to be neat. It's not going to be pretty. It's not going to adhere to the schedule that we might like it to adhere to. And from one party's perspective, the other side, failure to compromise is obstinacy. And if you embed in the process a reward for obstinacy, you will never get that compromise. I think that is using the people of Minnesota as a pawn. I think that does an inherent disservice to the political process that our Constitution set up. If you reward obstinacy, you will get obstinacy. You will not get political resolution, which is what our electors, our constituents, sent us here to accomplish.
Senator DeCraeve.
Thank you, Madam President. To that point, and to Senator Latz's point on compromise, as I recall last session, the governor did come to an agreement with our Ag Committee early on. Other than that, we had our bills done early, and we asked the governor to come and speak with us. We asked his commissioners, come and speak with us. Tell us what you like in the bills. Tell us what you don't like in the bills, but let's talk about this so that we may be able to compromise on these bills. But what happened is we were shown the hand. He said, I don't want to talk to you about them. Unless we raise taxes, $1.4 billion, I don't want to talk to you about anything. And that's where the impasse came in. And so compromise means coming in and talking to us. And he refused to do that. So I believe we did our work. We put together bills, a balanced budget with all the money we had to spend. We even used the money in the checkbook, which I personally may not have agreed with. But we did that. We did it in a responsible manner. And the governor chose to say, no, I'm not going to talk to you about it. I don't want to talk about it unless we raise taxes. And that's not compromise.
To that point, Senator Latz?
To that point, Madam President and members, Senator DeCraeve is talking as if you can somehow separate out pieces of the budget from the whole. You know, let's just remove the spleen and fix that, even when the heart has got big problems. Governor Pawlenty used that tactic to his advantage. He signed a bunch of bills as they were sent to him and had the effect of boxing in the legislature. So when you came down to the last couple of bills, options were more limited. Governor Dayton, I would submit, wasn't going to allow that to happen. He wasn't going to get boxed in by committing three-quarters of the budget and leaving very little room for him to negotiate or maneuver when you get down to the last pieces. You can't talk as if these are independent parts that have no bearing on the other parts. Once you sign spending bills that spend a whole lot of money, You don't leave yourself any room in the end to maneuver in a negotiation. And what Governor Dayton was doing was saying, look, we got to deal with this as a whole package. And if you, legislature, aren't willing to deal with it in a whole package, then you got to take your blinders off. Governor Dayton was willing to talk with everyone about the whole package. He wasn't willing to get nickeled and dimed to death and presented with a fait accompli at the end. That is a perfectly legitimate negotiating strategy, which is an inherent part of this political process. And what the majority, or what Senator Kreif's bill wants to do with this stuff is nickel and dime it. Finalize pieces here, finalize pieces there. Separate out parts of the budget and box in the governor. But believe me, this could work the other way around when the shoe's on the other foot someday. But that's one reason why this is such a bad bill.
Actually, I have Senator Higgins, and then Senator Higgins passes. Senator Cohen.
Madam President, members, this last exchange between Senator DeCroix and Senator Latz makes the point as to why we ought to defeat this bill and why it's not legislation that ought to be passed. In 2005, I was the author of the Lights On legislation for the totality of the budget, and that was legislation offered as we were approaching a government shutdown. It was rejected by the Republican minority because the argument was is that this was government on autopilot. But here's the significant distinction between this approach and what we did in 2005, or attempted to do in 2005. Our attempt in 2005 was to address the particular crisis that we faced at that particular time. In no way did we suggest that we ought to do that in perpetuity, as this legislation would, and as the other so-called lights on bills would that are being offered in this legislature, to keep government on autopilot year after year after year after year after year. We attempted to address the particular situation at a particular time. In fact, the person who was quite critical of that approach was, of course, Governor Pawlenty, who used exactly that phrase, that it was an abrogation of the legislative responsibility to attempt to do it in that fashion. Now, I disagree with Governor Pawlenty because our approach was meant to be only a one-time approach for that particular year. And in fact, if I remember the legislation that I authored correctly, it was only for the first year of the biennium. It was not for the entirety of the biennium. The legislation offered by Senator DeCroix and others, this is the first bill, so appropriate to make the comment now, the legislation offered by Senator DeCroix this morning is legislation that would continue in perpetuity. That's not the way to run a government. And I would suggest to members, if you want to make sure you abrogate all legislative responsibility, pass the bill. And let's at the same time, I know people here are big on constitutional amendments, let's have a constitutional amendment to abolish the legislature because we won't need one.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much, and I think that this is a worthy discussion. I appreciate the clarity with which members of the Senate are articulating what the problems are with these lights-on legislation, that that they're choosing winners and losers well ahead of any kind of a process going on in the legislature. And in light of the fact that we all, at least in the legislature, agree that the responsibility for getting our work done on time, which is the public expectation, lies in the hands of the legislature. In that light, I would like to offer the A3 amendment.
Senator Sharon offers the A3 amendment. The Secretary will read the amendment.
Senator Sharon moves to amend Senate File 1975 as follows. Delete everything after the enacting clause and insert. This is the A3 amendment.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much. This delete all amendment replaces the lights on bill with language directed towards the sphere of influence that we actually have and can do something about to meet what the public have asked us to do, increase our capacity for conflict resolution. There are three components to it, and what they do is strengthen those factors that need strengthening to help us get our job done on time. In the first section, Finance Legislation Conference Committee Requirement, As Senator DeCrieff indicated and talked about in the agriculture bill, which was passed early and signed by the governor, one that he was talking about as a model, what happened in that piece of work in part of the legislature is that the conference committee had a blend of both Democrats and Republicans. What this does is allow the majority, whether they are the Republicans or the Democrats, to have input, especially when the governor is of the opposite party, from the minority members to help the legislators who are pursuing a successful end of the legislature with a governor's signature, to hear what it is that they can do within those bills in order to achieve that objective. So the first part of this legislation addresses what I and others in this Senate believe contributed to the difficulties of conflict resolution in closing out or shutting out input from the opposite party from any of the negotiations. The second part of this bill focuses on the compensation of the legislature. Section 3 relates to the compensation being suspended in the legislature if there, in fact, is a shutdown. The reason for this being an important part of our efforts to try to engage in those things that will increase conflict resolution is that we feel the consequences of our ineffectiveness. We feel the consequences of our unwillingness to listen to each other and to come to a mediated settlement. That we are the ones that begin to experience some of the consequences. The alternatives that are here is trying to diminish some of the consequences in very select areas of the public. There's nothing in the legislation that I'm asking to be deleted and replaced with this that deals with us. And we're the ones that are responsible for being ineffective and getting our work done on time. And we're the ones that are responsible for finding a way to get the governor's signature on a bill so that we can close the session or, if we aren't able by the end of the session, to do what is in the Section 4, which is to ask the Chief Justice of the Minnesota Supreme Court not to hire a union mediator, but to hire a mediator, and I believe the Chief Justice would be responsible about selecting an effective mediator to help us see what mediation actually does do. Unlike Senator DeCrieff's description of mediation, what actual mediation is about is stepping back and redefining what the problem is and allowing people to restate what it is that they really want to accomplish and then helping both sides find a way of getting there in order to avoid a negative outcome. One of the strengths of a mediator, a good mediator, and I trust that the courts would make such an effort to find a qualified and excellent mediator, is that they can help both sides experience what the negative, understand what the negative consequences are of their entrenchment. And also encourage them to think about ways that they can get where they need to go for their constituents without losing everything. So Section 4, which is the third component of the bill, deals with having a mediator help us between the end of session and before a shutdown so that we are able to put something together to avoid that final shutdown. Any of the costs that are associated with that would be absorbed out of the Senate's budget and the House budget. So that's what the delete all amendment is, and I offer that to the members, my colleagues on the floor.
Senator DeCrieff, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would argue the germaneness of the bill. This amendment that Senator Sheeran is proposing, it greatly expands the intended accomplished and substantially different purpose than the original bill which was proposed.
Advice for the president? Senator Latz.
Mr. President, I rise to support the germaneness determination of this amendment. It is certainly germane. The underlying bill relates to the budget and appropriations, and the amendment relates to the budget and appropriations. Rule 35.2 indicates subject and purpose are the two prongs upon which your determination should be made. The amendment is intended to accomplish a substantially similar purpose as the bill, which is to provide a mechanism by which the budget can be resolved in a timely manner and to minimize the consequences of the failure to resolve it to the members of the public, the people of Minnesota. As I say, the subject is the budget and the overall budget negotiations and consequences that we deal with every day here in the legislature. I would also call your attention to Section 402 of Mason's Legislative Manual, Paragraph 2, which states that to determine whether an amendment is germane, the question to be answered is whether the question is relevant, appropriate, and in a natural and logical sequence to the subject matter of the original proposal. Well, certainly it is all part and parcel of the same subject matter. And it's required only to relate to the same subject. It doesn't have to do the same thing, but it does have to relate to the same subject. And certainly this amendment relates to the subject of our budget and attempts to resolve the budget. So for those reasons, in fact, Mason's even recognizes a complete substitution as germane, so long as it's germane to the main purpose of the original proposal, and that would be in paragraph 4 of section 402. And for those reasons, the President ought to rule that the amendment is germane.
Senator Nenow, advice.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just would remind the President that we first are governed by Senate rules, secondarily governed by Masons, and the question of germaneness was made pursuant to Part 2 of Senate Rule 35.2.
The President rules that the amendment is not germane and therefore out of order.
Appeal the ruling of the Chair and ask for a roll call.
The rule being appealed, roll call requested. The Secretary will take the roll.
Mr. President,
shall the decision of the President be the judgment of the Senate?
Mr. President.
Senator Bonoff.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, you didn't give much rationale for why you did address it that way, but nonetheless, before we go to roll call, I wanted to make a few comments on the other side of that. So, sitting on your desk, there's a Star Tribune editorial that says bills should broadly deter shutdowns. And we have been hearing several bills on the same subject in the Finance Committee. And each time, myself and other members have brought to our finance chair the concern that we are not dealing with the shutdown in a comprehensive, strategic way, and that it is not sound management practice to be doing these one at a time. During the weekend, the Star Tribune took a public position on that very subject and talked about how that was not the right way to go. Specifically,
Mr. President.
Senator Bonoff, if we could keep the conversation to the appeal.
Yes, to the appeal. So your ruling that it was not germane when, in fact, when the Star Tribune editorial was addressing the bills before us and they pointed to Senator Sharon's bill as being a better way to go versus the bills that are before us, and that was just the matter of public opinion. So for the chair to rule, or the President to rule that it wasn't germane when, in fact, in the area of, you know, public conversation, the two have been coupled together seems particularly partisan and not in keeping with the honor of the position that you have taken by standing in that chair.
Thank you, Senator Bonoff. That is the nature of the appeal. With that, the Secretary will take the roll. The Secretary will please close the roll. Seeing 35 ayes and 30 nays, the ruling is upheld and the amendment is ruled not germane based on scope. Any further debate? Senator Sharon.
Thank you. Given the ruling of the chair, I would like to offer the A4 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Sharon moves to amend Senate File 1975 as follows. Page 1 after line 10, insert. This is the A4 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much. This amendment narrows the scope of what it is that I'm proposing specifically to the gambling and horse racing finance legislation that is inherent and essential to Senator DeCrave's bill. What this amendment does is in the instance in which the legislature has not resolved its issues in this area, that each body of the legislature must appoint at least one member of its minority caucus to a conference committee. It requires that the salaries of the legislature be suspended until a budget resolution is occurred if there is a shutdown, and it requires that the Chief Justice of the Minnesota Supreme Court appoint a mediator in order to assist the legislature in conflict resolution between the end of session and the beginning of a shutdown. This much more narrowly defined amendment speaks specifically to the issues of concern to Senator DeCrife in this area and our better focus, because they assist us in getting our work done in a timely manner, and they do not establish, as the legislation that Senator DeCrife is offering, a situation that encourages people to be less likely to resolve their conflicts, to put their heels in the ground, and gives power to those who are in opposition to change. And as it was so eloquently described by members of the Senate minority, have indicated why Governor Dayton learned from Governor Pawlenty's use of breaking out the spending proposals and then holding off on the more difficult ones that affect the poor and those who need medical care services. The most difficult parts of the budget that often are in conflict are left to the end. And this prohibits that process from happening. It allows the legislature to take a look at the whole, take a look at the general ability of the legislature to spend, and divides out its spending according to its priority. This opposes planning for a shutdown. This opposes establishing a process in which those who are in opposition are given more power. Those who do not want change are given more power. Places government spending on autopilot, completely takes away the authority of the legislature to do its work, and instead places a proposal that increases our probability, increases our conflict resolution capacity. And I'm hoping that that the entire body sees the wisdom in preparing for better conflict resolution rather than preparing for a shutdown.
Further discussion to the amendment. Senator DeCrife.
Madam President, I would ask that we divide this amendment, that we would divide it between lines 1.12 and 1.13, and then again between lines 1.24 and 1.25, and that we I would like to vote on including the Section 2 as an amendment onto my bill.
Senator DeCrife, you are allowed to divide, but the author of the amendment will decides which part to vote on first.
Okay, and I would just further say, Madam President, that I would be in favor of voting a green vote on Section 2.
Would you restate the last statement that you made, Senator DeCrife? I did not hear it.
Senator DeCrife. Senator Craig.
Madam President, what I'm suggesting is I'm asking for for affirmative on Section 2, and I would agree to amend Section 2 onto my bill and reject the rest of it.
Section 3.
I'm sorry, just a minute.
No, wait.
Section 2. Yeah, Section 2.
It's an amendment.
And maybe it would be helpful if I would repeat. Senator DeCryf has asked the A4 amendment be divided so that the first section, I believe, that he is talking about would be lines 1.1 through 1.12 would be one section, would be one division. Section 1.13 through 1.24 would be that second section. And then 1.25 to the end would be the third section. That is, he's dividing it between those lines. Senator Sharon.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. I now understand that this proposal to divide the amendment and to take Section 2 and amend it on to Senator DeCryf's bill is simply continuing what Senator DeCryf intends to do, which is to plan for only that which will happen after a shutdown. That's faulty thinking. He misses the point of why that proposal is not in the best interest of the state of Minnesota, not in the best interest of the legislature. It's about preparing for a shutdown rather than doing the things that are the responsibility of the legislature to avoid a shutdown in the first place. So all of those things that, Yes, and I would disagree that this should first of all, I disagree that there should be divided, but certainly we should not allow this to be voted on first. The division should be the sections. If there's a division, the sections of the bill should be voted in its order.
Senator Sharon, so what you are asking is that we vote on the sections in order. So lines 1.1 through 1.12, then the next. Because you're allowed to determine which section we would vote on first.
I'm allowed to determine which section is voted on first, and the first section should be section 1. The second, do I do the entire order? If it's divided, I can determine the whole order.
Yes.
And the second should be section 3, and the third should be section 2, if it's done in an order, and I would request a roll call on each of those votes.
Roll call has been requested. Roll call granted. Senator Nino?
Madam President, just point of order. Senator Craif's motion was to divide the question. He asked where it was to be divided. The maker of the amendment doesn't necessarily get to choose to redivide unless there's another motion of some sort, I do believe, Madam President. Just a parliamentary inquiry.
Senator Nino, I don't believe she is redividing it. The way that I understood Senator DeCryf's division was between lines 1.12, so that section 1 and above would be 1, and then Senator DeCryf also asked between 1.24 and 1.25. So there would be three sections. Am I misunderstanding Senator DeCryf?
Thank you, Madam President. The division that you just explained is correct, but what I wanted to do is agree to amend section 2 that you identified onto my bill.
But Senator DeCryf, at this point, we are voting on sections. The author of the amendment is allowed to determine what order we would vote on those. So we will vote on that section and determine if it would be added to your bill.
Okay. I will agree with that, Madam President.
Thank you. So just so if people, Senator Sharon, you have something to add?
I just want to be clear that the order would be section 2, section 1, section 3, and then section 2.
Yes, Senator Sharon, I have that written down, and I will try to make it very clear before we vote. Senator Rest?
Madam President, I just have a point of clarification. Did Senator DeCryf want it just divided into two parts so that section 1 and 3 would be voted on as one, and then section 2 voted on separately, or he did want it in three parts?
Senator Rest, that is a good question that I did not ask. Senator DeCryf, were you talking about three votes or two, or I should say two sections or three sections? Senator DeCryf.
Madam President, it would be okay with me if sections 1 and 3 were voted on in one vote, and if section 2 was voted on independently.
is that your motion to divide would be to create one out of the sections 1 and 3. Was that to division? I'm sorry. Is that how you wanted the amendment? So that sections 1 and 3 were one, and you were just pulling out section 2?
Yes, Madam President.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for helping out Senator Rest. So what we do now have would be it's still a division, and so that Senator DeKreif is dividing the amendment so that 1.1 through 1.12 and 1.25 through the end of the amendment would be one portion. Section 2, which is 1.13 through 1.24, would be the second section. And Senator Sharon, I am assuming then that given that you had wanted that first section voted on first, that a vote on that sections 1 and 3 as one vote is acceptable. Senator Sharon.
Yes, as the first vote in that I've requested a roll call.
Thank you very much, Senator Sharon. There is a roll call. Okay. We are voting on the division for sections 1 and 3, which is line 1.1 through 1.2 and line 1.25 through the end of the amendment. The secretary will take the roll on that portion.
What she's going to do. Yeah.
All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 29 ayes and 36 nays, the amendment is not adopted.
Madam President.
Senator Sharon.
I withdraw the A4 amendment.
Senator Sharon has withdrawn the A4 amendment. Further discussion on Senate File 1975. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1975 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1975, a bill for an act relating to state government, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1975.
Last I talked to Michael, actually sell it. Cars. We could get
talk about that strategy.
37
All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 35 ayes and 30 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Continuing on special orders, Senator DeKreif.
Thank you, Madam President. I would like to request taking Senate File 1843 from the table.
Senator DeKreif has moved to take Senate File 1843 from the table. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. We have in front of us Senate File 1843. Senator DeKreif.
I believe before we laid it on the table, there was an amendment that was asked to be prepared, and I agreed to give them the time to prepare this amendment, so I guess I would ask for them to submit.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you very much, Senator DeKreif, for your consideration. The amendments to this bill were the same as the amendments of the last bill, and I think that it would not be in the best interest of our time to go through the same amendments and have the same outcome.
Further discussion on Senate File 1843? Seeing none, Secretary will give Senate File 1843 its third reading.
Senate File number 1843, a bill for an act related to natural resources, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1843. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 37 ayes and 28 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Remaining under the special orders designation number 38 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1675, Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President. Members, I have Senate File 1675. This is a department bill, the Children and Family Services Policy Bill. Quite an extensive piece of legislation. We, under child protection categories, we expand protections for safe place for newborns, extending the time from 72 hours to 7 days. We add urgent care clinics and 911 service. We extend immunity to the professionals accepting the newborns in those clinics. Other child protection provisions, we add birth match provisions for definitions regarding maltreatment and support, and we repeal last year's repeal a requirement for maltreatment review panel, and members, the maltreatment review panel is for those child care facilities that have had
an accusation of maltreatment. Nothing has been found. It gave one more point of appeal, but the panel had no authority. And so it serves no purpose to have in existence. We simplify, streamline, and align permanency and adoption requirements, requiring all children, not just those 8 and younger, who are in foster care for 6 months, to review progress on the case plan and have the agency make reasonable efforts for unification, at the same time requiring notice to parents who might be considered for legal placement, and this is to expedite permanency for children of all ages. Under the juvenile code, remove provisions of child welfare into one chapter, clarify the requirements, and reorder. So lots of language, but not big changes there. We eliminate duplicative adoption requirements for children who are under guardianship of the commissioner. One of the key provisions here is for children who are moving to independence, that they be given the opportunity to have their credit reviewed in case one of the adults who has had custody of them has been misusing their identity. We conform to federal requirements by expanding access to child support data. We clarify requirements to ensure children remain in the same school when they're placed in foster care. This is important for those children so that they have something permanent in their life. Educational and medical needs of children are separate items in placement decisions, and the development of independent living plans for youth. Under the child support revision, change a work reporting statute. The changes are not burdensome to employers, and they are in compliance with federal law. We repeal an exemption on the statute of limitations for civil judgments. Last year it was 20 years. It is found to be burdensome by the court, and so it is reverting to 10 years. Transitional standard statute is now moved from a specific table to a point of reference within the Department of Human Services, so we don't have to continually update statute. CCAP, similarly, we change application date for date of qualification, not signature date. We improve CCAP integrity by prohibiting CCAP payments to a child care provider when the provider is not in compliance with licensing, and require child care providers to maintain written records only for those children who are qualified under CCAP payments. We did a little bit of terminology change under the MFIP program, the diversionary work program, by replacing natural parent with birth parent. We aligned some MFIP requirements with food support policies and remove inconsistent language. We removed two diversionary work program criteria, which no longer apply and were causing confusion for our counties. So those are the major provisions in this bill. Madam President, I do have the A-12 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Benson moves to amend Senate File 1675 as follows. Page 73, after line 32, insert. This is the A-12 amendment.
To the amendment, Senator Benson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. This is a large amendment, 91 pages, and we have discussed this in our caucuses. We moved Senate File 1173 to pass off this floor, 64-0. The House did not get their work done, and so they have this language traveling with the companion to Senate File 1675, and so I'm asking for accommodation that this language be merged so that they travel together and simplify our matching up process. A brief review of what we did last year, and I put the documentation on your desk so that you will see Senate Council did draft the amendment to match the language we passed with the exception of a date change. The provisions in the bill, adoption assistance, permanency requirements that actually are compatible with the permanency requirements that are in Senate File 1675. Federal conformities that are actually necessary to make 1675 federal conformities make sense. And with that, members, I ask for your support on the A-12 amendment.
Further discussion of the A-12, Senator Lurie.
Thank you, Madam President. I rise in agreement with the A-12 amendment and would encourage member support.
On Senator Benson's motion to adopt the A-12 amendment, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Benson, further discussion of Senate File 1675.
Madam President, I have nothing further.
Senator Lurie.
Madam President, I had an A-14 amendment drafted. I am not going to offer that as we've been working on it for, really for about a day. But the House does have a provision in this bill that is regarding the Indian Child Welfare Act and transfer of cases over to the tribal courts. We thought we were on a pretty good track, but there's been some questions raised about how this might work, and I just want to alert the body to the fact that work will continue on this provision. The author and the chair and the lead on judiciary have been engaged in this conversation, and we expect the conversation to proceed, and I hope that we can find a good resolution. But there is this issue still floating, and the House does have the Indian Child Welfare Act transfer to tribal courts in their bill, and we'll continue to work on it. I just wanted to make note of that for members.
Further discussion on Senate File 1675. Secretary will give Senate File 1675 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1675, a bill for an act relating to human services, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1675. All those senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 64 ayes and no nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving on to number 119 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 1750, Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President and members. Senate File 1750 is this year's DNR lands bill. And it's a combination of 15 bills from 9 different senators. Myself, Senator Kubley, Senator Howe, Senator Olson, Senator Saxok, Senator Bach, Senator Gazelka, Senator Sieben, and Senator Limmer. The primary purpose of the bill is to authorize the sale of certain tax-forfeited lands. The lands are located in Beltrami, Big Stone, Goodhue, Hennepin, Itasca, Coochiching, Lake, Morrison, St. Louis, and Washington counties. The bill also authorizes the DNR to sell two parcels, which are located in Dakota and St. Louis County. The bill contains small boundary changes for two state parks, two state recreation areas, and two state forests. The bill authorizes the DNR to issue road easements to individuals on school trust lands, provided that the easement term is limited to 50 years rather than being perpetual. This would be similar to the expansion of easements authority granted several years ago to counties for tax forfeited land. The bill amends Minnesota Statute Section 9250 to change the limit of the real estate lease term of 10 years to 21 years to conform to changes previously made to Minnesota Statute Section 89.17, the Forest Land Leases and Permits. This would authorize the DNR to issue real estate leases for a term of up to 21 years at the DNR's discretion for all types of lands. Senator Limmer's bill that was incorporated into Senate File 1750 exempts portions of the Mississippi River within the boundaries of the cities of Dayton and Ramsey from the Minnesota Wild, Scenic, and Recreational Rivers system. The area will be subject to the current city zoning standards. The bill provides for an expedited land exchange process for exchanging state-owned land located in the BWCAW, that's the Boundary Water Canoe Area Wilderness, for federally owned lands located outside of the wilderness area. The bill also provides for private sale of the surplus lands. These sections are providing for more efficient and cost-effective processes for the removing of the state lands from the Boundary Water Canoe Area Wilderness. These sections do not specify the lands to be obtained in the exchange, nor the amount of lands to be exchanged or sold. Essentially, what this does, members, is it sets up the process. So as we move forward with trying to get the lands, our school trust lands, out of the Boundary Water Canoe Area Wilderness so that we can get them productive for the school children, this sets up the process, and then later on we'll start identifying lands with the federal government. And with that, members, that concludes, and I'll stand for any questions. And I understand that Senator Scoy might have an amendment.
Well, that was a wonderful segue. Further discussion, Senator Scoy.
Keep a straight face.
Thank you, Madam President. And I do. I have the A3 amendment.
Secretary will report the amendment.
Senator Scoy moves to amend Senate File 1750 as follows. Page 2 after line 17, insert. This is the A3 amendment.
To your amendment, Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam President and members. The A3 amendments is the same as a bill that I had in the Environment Committee. It designates that part of the Heartland Trail that would go from Park Rapids to Itasca State Park would be part of the state trail system. At the time that I was in committee with this, the advocates in Hubbard County were uncertain about the direction they wanted to go with this trail. They've since contacted me and asked if we can do this. I talked to Senator Engerbetz, and he's supportive. I've also talked to the author of the bill, and I'll let him speak for himself, but I believe he's supportive of this. So I would ask for your support in this needed trail addition. Thank you.
Further discussion to the A3 amendment. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam President, and I do support Senator Scoy's amendment. It's a great amendment. Anyone that has biked on the Heartland Trail knows that it's a great trail to bike on. The only problem is there's this segment between Park Rapids and Itasca State Park where you have to ride out on the road, and it's not safe. This is it's a great addition to this trail somewhere down the road, and this just sets that up.
Further discussion to the A3 amendment. Senator Scoy renews his motion the A3 amendment be adopted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Further discussion on Senate File 1750. Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 1750 its third reading.
Senate File Number 1750, a bill for an act relating to natural resources, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll on Senate File 1750.
Yes.
voting no.
Hey, Ben, do you know about this group? Honest, Scott. I said, you are jumping me into the middle of something I got no idea, but I'm trying to explain it to you. I said, no, you're not. You're jumping me into a middle of a bill I don't know. These people and blah, blah, blah.
Minneapolis is not united.
Although senators having voted who desire to vote, the secretary will close the roll. There being 53 ayes and 11 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to. Moving to 139 on the general orders calendar, Senate File 2493, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President. And members, this Senate File 2493 is a legacy bill, the yearly legacy bill of the Sarge-Sams Outdoor Heritage Legacy Bill. The bill, again, truly creates a legacy and is for all Minnesotans across the great state of Minnesota. I have to really thank the council, the members that worked tirelessly throughout the year, receiving many different proposals. Somewhere is upwards of $200 and some million worth of proposals that are coming in yearly for programs to the council, and with Bill Becker and his staff working tirelessly on this, they did a tremendous job, and I want to thank them at this time. The Clean Water, as everyone probably knows, the Clean Water Fund, Parks and Trails Fund, and Arts and Culture Fund are biannual appropriations, while again the Lasard-Sams Outdoor Heritage has an annual appropriation recommendation. The Outdoor Heritage Fund makes up the majority of the bill, with some clean water appropriations and changing to Parks and Trails account. I'll explain that a little bit later. Members, you have a copy of the appropriations listed with my name on it. If you would notice that this year during in the Prairies section, $26.6 million was spent on prairie restoration projects. In the forest area, there was $17.3 million was expended. In the wetlands area, there was $31.1 million that were expended on projects, and habitat in general was $26.62 million. I should give you a little history, folks. Those of you that haven't been here as long as I have, I've been here since the inception of the Lasard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council. The first year that we put together a bill, the bill totaled about $57 million, and this year, as you can see, it's almost $100 million minus the clean water funds that we're talking about. So what that should tell you, folks, is that the state of Minnesota is rebounding, at least in my view it is. I would think you would agree with that, because it is a certain proportion of the sales tax, and people are getting a little more comfortable coming out of this recession that we've all been tirelessly fighting over the last few years. So that's the good news. Some of the highlights of the bill are the Mississippi Northwoods Habitat Complex. We purchased 2,000 acres with these dollars. Members, this was a tremendous opportunity to be a state-county partnership, if you will. What this bill does actually purchase the 2,000 acres along the pristine Mississippi River north of Brainerd, and it turns right around and actually gives it to the county. The county has agreed to take this this portion of land, and they will actually manage the land, so we won't have to pay for that, and also the PILT obligation will go away. They would not have to, of course, pay. The state does not have any PILT obligation, which is certainly a win-win situation. So it does address the situation that I know some folks have with purchasing land. We're buying it with the taxpayers' dollars. We're turning it back over to the county, and county's managing it. Also included in that particular acquisition is language to not pay any more than what the recommendation would come from the state of Minnesota when it comes to appraisal values. That's always the case when we do some purchasing of state lands, that it cannot. So there is a mechanism in place not to pay any more than what it's worth. I should also note that there was talk that we're paying an awful lot per acre for this particular project. This is actually less money than we paid for the LaSalle project a couple years ago per acre. Also, there's a mechanism in place here if and when a trail will be put through this area. The Lasard Sam's portion of the legacy money does not pay for trails, so this particular account would be reimbursed by the trails account if and when that trail is ever put through this property, and I think that would be one of the long-range plans. But again, that mechanism is in place where that money will actually come back to the bottom line on Lasard and have to be expended in another year. In this bill, we have nearly $14 million in RIM. RIM, of course, everybody knows is a project where we actually get some federal dollars that are brought back. I believe it's $1.60 for every dollar that's expended comes back to the state of Minnesota. So that certainly is a good bargain for the value, and we think that's certainly a good plan. And I should also add just a point of interest at the federal level. I know the concern is for those that are concerned about habitat and programs that the federal government has agreed to with farmers over the years. A lot of them are coming due this year at the federal level, and with the price of grain, the price of soybeans, the price of corn, a lot of those acres are probably going to come out of set aside and go back into production. So this will certainly help with that situation. There's no question. In this bill, there's a $5.5 million that's been set aside for the Asian carp barriers. A lot of discussion about expenditures there in different parts of government this year. Myself and my counterpart in the House met with the governor's office yesterday, and we're in the process of pulling those dollars together from different areas, whether it be the Clean Water Fund, which is included in here, $1.8 million, which voted upon by the Clean Water Council. They're willing to put $1.8 million towards the research center at the University of Minnesota. So an awful lot is happening. A lot of one-time money is being put towards the fight of the invasive carp that's coming up the river, and at the same time we're going to be dealing in bills that are coming next week with regards to the DNR and their constant battle against the zebra mussels and quagga mussels. The Clean Water Fund, as you notice, there'll be an expenditure there. There's about $6 million that was appropriated, but the programs did not go through. So this bill will reappropriate $6 million, and it's clear that 4.2 of that's going to go to clean water grants, and $1.8 million, nearly $2 million, is going to go to the University of Minnesota, again, for the invasive species research. Now that you may want to ask if that's going to leave any money on the bottom line in the Clean Water Council. It does. It actually leaves still $3 million on the bottom line. Parks and Trails, one little section there last year I don't know that we omitted or forgot about, but during our discussions with regards to the splitting up of the Parks and Trails money in last year's Parks and Trail budget, part of that particular language
that we're removing this year is the 25% match requirement for the rural fund, as well as a $500,000 cap on grants. That's basically bringing it to the same, bringing the rural Minnesota parks into the same category as the Metro and DNR parks funding. I did talk with the people that were involved with that. We had a long discussion about that with the Metro Parks, and we came up with an agreement that that the rural parks should be treated the same as Metro, and that didn't seem to be a problem. There were $11 million that were actually reappropriated for the Metro Parks that were not spent, and this bill does appropriate those $11 million, reappropriate that $11 million that has not been spent with the assurance that it is going to be spent. They just haven't got their program together quite yet. So, members, that's what I have. If you have any questions on the bill, I stand for questions. Any concerns at all, it's the yearly bill. We do it annually. We don't do it biannually, because these programs do change an awful lot throughout the state, and I think probably some year we'll be coming with a biennial budget. We've had some pretty good discussion about that in the Lasard Sands Outdoor Heritage Council, but at this point we still feel it should come yearly, so I stand for questions.
Senator Saxhog.
Thank you, Madam President, and as the other member of the Lasard Sams Outdoor Heritage Council, I stand in support of Senate File 2493. The recommendations by Lasard Sams, I think, are carefully thought out. I believe in the best interest of the people of the state of Minnesota, and I will ask for your support.
Senator Rest.
Thank you, Madam President. I just want to express my appreciation to Senator Ingebrigtsen and Senator Saxhog, in particular for the Asian carp provisions. Those are not only important for those states that have the Mississippi River and, in our instance, the St. Croix, but also for all of the Great Lakes states, and we want to keep them out of Lake Superior. They wouldn't come there perhaps by the Mississippi or the St. Croix, but protecting us against that menace is extremely important, and I appreciate the council's advocacy for that position.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Seeing none, the secretary will give Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Madam President. I just had a question. If Senator Ingebrigtsen would yield for just a half a second.
Senator Ingebrigtsen will yield.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen. Thank you for the bill. You know, I always am a little concerned about the metro-rural divide. I just wanted to put that on the record, given that most of the revenues are generated in the metro area, but it's one Minnesota. Happy to see all the preservation and conservation activity that's going on around the state. That's a good thing. I know that the counties that have a lot of land set aside for public purposes receive the payment in lieu of taxes payments, the PILT payments, and I just want to be sure that we're all aware of that implication, and if you could let us know how much PILT payments will be increasing to those jurisdictions that are having more land set aside being publicly held in conservation. How much of the PILT payments going up as a result of this bill?
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam President, and Senator, for that question. The PILT obligation for this bill is $87,215. And now, what does that actually bring as far as a total PILT payment from the beginning of the fund? The obligation to the state of Minnesota over the past 4 years is $578,000 worth of PILT. I should also note, members, that the program or the outlook of the 25-year outlook, and that has been a lot of discussion over how much land is going to be purchased and with this particular fund, and that is always a concern of not only this body but the House
And we're paying, I believe before we started, I think the Minnesota's obligation to PILT in general was about $20 million per year. The overall projected PILT liability for Lesard Sam's Outdoor Heritage purchases over 25 years will add another $5 million. And again, those figures are very, very rough, but in that approximate area over a 25-year period. So if you put that in perspective to the over $20 million that we're already paying before we even started, that really isn't a whole lot. So, but it's certainly a concern. There is a PILT study going on, Senator Dibble, as you know, in the tax bill last year. We have that, and that report will be coming back at the end of December. I think myself and many other members here certainly want to know exactly how those dollars are distributed out into counties and townships, because I know there's a different system for different types of lands, but we'll have that study done by the end of December, ready to report back.
Is there any further discussion on the bill?
Oops. What?
Seeing none, the Secretary will give Senate File 2493 its third reading.
Senate File Number 2493, a bill for an act relating to natural resources, third reading.
Secretary will take the roll. All those senators desiring to vote, the Secretary will, and have voted, the Secretary will close the roll. That's right. There being 63 ayes and 0 nays, the bill is passed and its title agreed to.
Remaining under motions and resolutions, we'll move to the addendum that is printed for today. Move to the third order of business, messages from the House. The Secretary will read the message.
Madam President, I have the honor to announce the passage by the House of the following House file herewith transmitted, House File Number 2337, Albin A. Mathewitz, Chief Clerk, House of Representatives.
There's no Senate action necessary on that message. Moving to the fourth order of business, the first reading of House bills. First reading, Senator Senchum.
Madam President, I move that House File Number 2337 be laid on the table.
To Senator Senchum's motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the fifth order of business, the reports of committee, Senator Senchum.
Madam President, I move that the committee reports printed in the addendum be adopted, with the exception of the reports pertaining to Joint Rule 2.03.
To Senator Sencha's motion, all in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the sixth order of business, the second reading of Senate bills. They are printed on page 7 of today's Senate addendum. Second reading. Moving to the seventh order of business, second reading of House bills. There's one printed on page 7 of today's addendum. Second reading. Moving to the ninth order of business, motions and resolutions. There are two that are printed on the addendum on page 7. They will be taken as one motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion does prevail. Moving to the 13th order of business, announcements of Senate interest. I have several excuses for today. Without objection, the following senators will be excused. Senator Hand will be excused all day. Senator Higgins from 12:30 to the end of session. Without objection, they are excused. And Senator Marty from 12:55 to the end of session. Further announcements, Senator Cohen.
Madam President, a point of inquiry, if I might, to the Majority Leader.
Senator Sencha, will you yield?
Senator Cohen, yes.
Senator Sencha, will you yield?
Thank you, Madam President. Senator Sencha. Senator Sencha, I note that you have a bill in the Education Committee today, Senate File 1909, which is one of your Racino bills. And I'm just curious as to how this is going to work relative to the deadline, because I understand that the bill is not going anywhere in the House. So we're past the first deadline. Tomorrow is the second deadline. And the bill is in the Education Committee. It's not in the Finance Committee. Because it involves the Racino proposal, which was laid over or actually defeated in Senator Perry's committee, is it your intent then, if passed out of Senator Olson's committee, to have the bill go back to Senator Perry's committee as the committee of jurisdiction?
Senator Sencha.
Madam President, Senator Cohen, if it were to pass out of education, it would go to the Rules Committee.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President and Senator Sencha, would the intent then be to send it to Senator Perry's committee?
Senator Sencha.
Madam President, Senator Cohen, that thought process has not gone that far yet.
Senator Cohen.
Madam President, Senator Sencha, I realize we've been a little bit loose with rules around this place recently, but under the rule, relative to deadlines, the Finance Committee doesn't have a deadline. The bill is nowhere close to the Finance Committee at this point. With the second deadline, a bill is not to be heard unless the bill has passed the Committee of Jurisdiction in the other body, which this bill hasn't. So additionally, it seems to me that the Committee of Original Jurisdiction would be Senator Perry's committee in terms of the Racing Commission. So if this bill were to pass out of the Education Committee, I would assume at some point it has to be heard in Senator Perry's committee. So it seems to me we're going to have a lot of back and forth with the Rules Committee. And it just strikes me on a bill of this import that this seems to be a little bit of a different way to run things. And I'm just, so you indicated to the body that this bill, if passed out of Senator Olson's committee today, would then go directly to the Rules Committee. Is that correct?
Senator Sencha.
Madam President, Senator Cohen, if the bill were to pass out of Education Committee, it would need to go to Rules Committee for re-referral to another committee. If that be the wish of the Rules Committee. Obviously, the Rules Committee has to make their own decisions about these things.
Madam President, I'm not going to.
Senator Cohen, announcements of Senate interest. I have provided you with some leeway.
No, and I was just going to make
Senator
a comment
Cohen.
Quickly and conclude that it just seems to me, Madam President, this is the only time appropriate on the agenda to inquire as to matters of parliamentary procedure. So it's totally in order to ask the question. I was just going to conclude by saying it seems to me this is going to be a little bit tricky on a bill of this import to bounce back and forth from committee to committee, or committee to rules to committee to rules to committee. And it just seems to be an unusual way to handle a bill of this import, particularly a bill that had been laid over in Senator Perry's committee.
Further announcements of Senate interest. Senator Senchum.
Madam President, members, the business now being concluded, I would move that we adjourn until Friday, March 23rd at 2 o'clock.
Senator Senchum has moved we adjourn until Friday, March 23rd at 2 o'clock. All in favor say aye. Those opposed, no. We are adjourned.
I didn't know what you just want to make sure you